Well, I spent 7 years in Dallas, Texas, so I have a little twang to add to it. And the first thing I learned to say was, thank you. Okay, so you know what I'm going to talk about. It's a little complicated. I got a lot of data to show you, so I'm going to try not to go too fast, but please give me a 5 minutes okay. So we can at least get through the main slides. And I'd love to walk around, but I'm attached to this. Okay, no relationships to disclose that you care about. And let's start with a little background. With the historic inclusion of LGBT health goals in the Health of People 2020, and the recent Institute of Medicine report on LGBT health has really brought more attention to the issues of the need for research on alcohol and violence and other social influences affecting LGBT health. And we've talked a little bit, some of the other presenters have talked a little bit about this. There are theories of minority stress. Some people call it stigma-related stress, some people call it minority stress. But there are a number of factors that are involved in this process. There are external factors such as stigma and discrimination. There have been some nice reports out on the effect of discrimination, both interpersonal and structural discrimination on health. There are internal processes, internalized homophobia, difficulties in regulating emotions, and of course other social factors, social isolations, lack of social support, and social disadvantage. So a couple of models have been proposed. Meyer and other authors have suggested that stressors directly relate to poor outcomes in health, specifically mental health problems. And there's some great work by Mark Hassenbuehler, and he suggests that the internal processes may mediate the relationship between these external factors such as discrimination and psychopathology. So among women, sexual minority status has but among sexual minority women, we see elevated rates of interpersonal violence, of alcohol problems, including hazardous drinking and alcohol use disorders, and I abbreviate that AUD, as well as psychiatric disorders, and possibly increased risk of co-occurring psychiatric disorders. And we'll talk a little bit about each one. So intimate partner violence, or IPV, probably functions as both an acute as well as a chronic stressor, and we see increased rates of PTSD, depression, as well as comorbid PTSD and depression among women overall who experience partner violence, and we also see increased rates of alcohol use disorders. And interestingly, in at least one or two studies, we've seen that sexual minority women are more than twice as likely to experience intimate partner violence. In this study, this is using the National Epidemiologic Survey on alcohol and alcohol-related problems and the NESARC data, and most of these data are from that study. So here you can see that both bisexual and heterosexual identified women who have same-sex partners have higher rates than exclusively heterosexual women and in sort of mid-range among lesbians. And this is for intimate partner violence. We're also looking at sexual assault, which is one of the most severe of traumatic experiences, and it can also cause long-term mental health problems. PTSD, again, depression, generalized anxiety. There's studies showing that there's an increased rate of co-occurring PTSD and depression, or PTSD and problem drinking among women with histories of sexual assault, and again, alcohol use problems or problem drinking. And again, sexual minority women are 2 to 3 times more likely to experience sexual assault. So here we see bisexual women and lesbian identified women having a much higher prevalence of sexual assault, as well as heterosexual women with same-sex partners when compared to exclusively heterosexual women. And this is the same study by Roberts and colleagues. Mood and anxiety disorders have also been found to be increased among sexual minority women, a study by Bostwick and colleagues. And we see increased odds ratios for lesbian and bisexual identified women for any lifetime mood disorder. But when you look at it by lifetime sex partners, only women with only female partners are at lower risk. Women with female and male partners are at higher risk. And sort of similar patterns with anxiety disorders, not as many significant findings. Again, looking at past heavy drinking and alcohol dependence by sexual minority status, McCabe and colleagues found that mostly these findings were significant with alcohol dependence past year. Both bisexual and lesbian identified women were at least three times more likely than heterosexual identified women to have past year alcohol dependence. And then looking at it by lifetime sex partners, the only significant finding was women with female and male partners. The singular study that I found on co-occurring psychiatric disorders and sexual minority status was that of the Cochrane study, which is a little bit older. And if you look at this, two or more disorders, lesbian and bisexual women, they were combined in this study, were almost three times more likely to have two or more disorders. Now, this is including depression, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and substance use disorders. But this study did not differentiate between co-occurring, it did not specifically address co-occurring alcohol use and other psychiatric disorders. And that's important because folks with psychiatric comorbidity have more severe clinical course than if you were to look at individuals that have either alcohol use disorder or another psychiatric disorder alone. And this also is a greater public health burden because people with co-occurring disorders tend to use health services more frequently or at increased rates. Thus, we decided that we would look at co-occurring alcohol use and mood or anxiety disorders and look at the differences by traumatic partner violence or sexual assault and look at that by sexual minority status. So it gets fairly complicated. And we did restrict this analysis to these events happening beginning in adulthood. There are many, many studies showing childhood abuse and trauma factors that affect these outcomes, and we wanted to try to avoid having that sort of suck up all the relationship between these factors. So this is just adult onset. We use this same study as some of the other authors, the NESARC study, which is a household survey. It includes civilian non-institutionalized adult population in the U.S. Wave 1 was conducted in 2001, 2002, and then the respondents from that wave were re-interviewed about 3 years later. And one adult was randomly selected for interview in each household. Let's talk about a couple of the key measures. This is going to sound very familiar to some of these other surveys that we've heard about today. Sexual orientation was measured only as a current identity. And you know, I would love to see some surveys that actually look at these changes over time because we know they're not static. So sexual orientation. So respondents were asked, which of the categories in the card best describes you? And then so it's current. How do you currently identify? And then sexual behavior, much like the other surveys, it was lifetime sex partners. So very, very general. How did we choose partner violence and sexual assault? Well, because we wanted to look at the adult onset, we used these measures from a list of potentially traumatic experiences in the NESARC survey that were designed to measure PTSD. So these are what the respondent would perceive as a potentially traumatic event. So for IPV, the question was, have you ever been physically attacked or badly beaten up or injured by a spouse or a partner in your lifetime? And we chose, again, the first onset at 18 years of age or older, and similarly with sexual assault, 18 years of age or older, is assaulted, molested, raped, or experienced unwanted sex. So these are perceived potentially traumatic events. For alcohol use and psychiatric disorders, we chose adult onset of alcohol abuse and or dependence, and either a depressive disorder or an anxiety disorder. And so the co-occurring disorder definition was having any alcohol use disorder and a mood or anxiety disorder over one's lifetime. So it doesn't necessarily have to happen at the same time period. And this was based on a structured interview schedule in which the criteria was based on a DSM-4. So it was a clinical diagnosis. So we didn't have, in this survey, there were fewer bisexual and lesbian women than I think in some of the other surveys. We had slightly more bisexually active women when you look at sexual behavior versus sexual orientation, 2% here versus 0.8 there. Not a lot. Looking at co-occurring alcohol use and depressive disorders, and we'll just focus on the co-occurring disorders, which is this column here, and we see that lesbian-identified women had the highest prevalence of a co-occurring disorder compared to heterosexual women, and then bisexual women were sort of in between. When you look at lifetime sex partners, it was women with both male and female partners that had the highest prevalence. Similarly, with anxiety disorders, both bisexual and lesbian-identified women had higher prevalence of co-occurring disorders. And when you use lifetime sex partners, it was only women with both female and male partners that had the higher prevalence rate. When we looked at these diagnostic patterns by IPV, by traumatic partner violence status, and this is now among all women, not looking at sexual minority status, the co-occurring disorder rate was much higher among women with depressive disorders as well as anxiety disorders. Similarly, when you look at traumatic sexual assault, depressive disorders, co-occurring alcohol and depressive disorders were increased among women with a history of sexual assault and as well as anxiety disorders. And then the next step was to look at these diagnostic categories. So you have no disorder, alcohol only, psychiatric disorder only, or both. And we're only showing the co-occurring disorder prevalence, just to simplify things. And what we did was we looked at it within each group. So among heterosexual identified women, we saw that co-occurring disorders were at 19% for women with IPV versus 6% without IPV. And this was these diagnostic categories were significantly different among heterosexual women. We saw a significant difference in these disorders among bisexual women, but notice that the prevalence rate was much higher among bisexual women with IPV than heterosexual women with IPV, and no differences among lesbian-identified women. And then we looked at this by lifetime sex partners, and only among women with male partners only, was there a significant difference in these diagnostic patterns. So among women with male partners only, those with IPV had a 19% prevalence of co-occurring disorders, and women without IPV, only 6%. And we did the same thing for sexual assault, and here we found both among heterosexual identified women and bisexual identified women, we found differences in those diagnostic patterns. Again, women with sexual assault, the prevalence of COD was 18%, much higher among bisexual women. So it's with sexual assault, without sexual assault. And I'm only going to be showing the results for depressive disorders. We have found similar results with anxiety disorders, but it would take much longer to go through it. If you look at your handouts online, you'll have those supplementary slides. Okay, and then again, lifetime sex partners. We had significant results among women with male partners only, higher rates of co-occurring disorders among women with sexual assault versus women without. But we also found that among women with female partners only, a very high rate of co-occurring disorders with sexual assault versus those without sexual assault. So we're seeing kind of all over the map when you look at it by sexual identity versus lifetime partners. Finally, we looked at these events among women who just had IPV, because we wanted to look at these patterns by sexual minority status to see if there was any difference, and we did find differences. And again, let's focus on the co-occurring disorders, and we see that bisexual women had increased prevalence compared to heterosexual and lesbian women. And again, this is co-occurring alcohol use and depressive disorders. When we use lifetime sex partners, we didn't have any events among women with female partners only, but much higher rates among, and I'm saying rates, the prevalence is much higher among women with both male and female partners. Same with traumatic sexual assault. So these are only women with traumatic sexual assault. For co-occurring disorders, we see both bisexual and lesbian-identified women having higher prevalence. By lifetime sex partners, we found this pretty much the same thing. Women with male and female partners, as well as women with female partners only, had a much higher prevalence of co-occurring disorders. Whew, we cut through it. Okay, I'm not going to go through all of this, but basically we found, as I said, the patterns varied depending on whether we used sexual identity, which is of course current identity, versus lifetime partners. And we know that sexual identity changes over time, and just because you identify as a lesbian doesn't mean you never had sex with a man. And so I think we're seeing, when you look at lifetime sex partners, you're getting a clearer picture, but it's hard with these measures because they're so not, there's just not enough detail. And I also want to point out that these are just associations, and we would like to do this using longitudinal data. Unfortunately, this proposal was not even discussed at the recent NIH review. If you'd like to send a letter of protest, please feel free. But we may resubmit or resubmit it in some other form, but we do need to look at this on a more longitudinal basis. So we know it's important to identify risk associated with poor outcomes in this environment of violence and trauma. And these, by doing that, we can inform the development of prevention and intervention efforts. And not just whether it's sexual minority status, but among each of these groups, what are the different risk factors? We want to strengthen the program and policy recommendations for mental health screening and intervention among sexual minority women, and also to focus on the development of gender and sexual minority specific and sensitive violence prevention programs. Sort of a given. We need to really change our focus and increase our focus on sexual minority women and be able to sort of drill down and improve the way that we look at screening, the way we look at how programs and interventions are designed. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge our research assistants who put a lot of effort into helping us with the preparation of the data, Chin Chu and Catherine Wright. And slides or in your handouts online.